Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Now joining us covering the NHL for The Athletic, she is Shayna Goldman. Shayna, thanks for doing this. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. So we've all had a few days here to digest everything that happened around the league at the trade deadline, take stock of the winners, the losers, all of that. I'll just start kind of at the top. I mean, who do you see as the best team, the teams to beat? And I'll limit you maybe to, let's say, two teams, the teams to beat in the NHL now post trade deadline.
Okay. All right. Starting with the East. It's a tough decision because I think the winner is in the Atlantic division, and I think the Panthers are obviously the favorite, but maybe like the team for me to watch that I could see take out the Panthers would be the Tampa Bay Lightning. I'm very high on what they did at the deadline. And shifting west, it's so close between like the teams at the very top. I think like the favorite is obviously Dallas, and I feel like the Panthers and the Stars are like the easy picks, but I want to be different, so I'm going to say the Avs and the Lightning.
I like it. The Lightning specifically, I mean, I loved what they did with the Gord and Bjorkstrand pickup, and it feels like they've been kind of off the radar for a lot of people this year, but beyond just the acquisitions at the trade deadline, what makes you see them as, you know, a legitimate, maybe even the top threat in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, I think the team came into the season with a clear weakness, and that was their forward depth. Like, the bottom six was Nick Paul and a bunch of guys, and they knew that. But it was all about whether, you know, some of the off-season moves would translate, and that was, you know, bringing back Ryan McDonough. Oh, look, Victor Hedman is back to playing to his strengths because he doesn't have to do everything by himself. And Eric Chernak looks good again with Ryan McDonough at his side. And bringing in Moser, like, those small moves made a lot of sense for them. And then the fact that you have Torelli and Hagel absolutely crushing it on both ends of the ice, I think it gave them kind of that green light to say, all right, go for it this year, right? Forget the future, focus on right now, and find the right pieces to accent your core. And that's huge. They didn't need the deadline to renovate this entire team and make them a whole new squad. They have an elite core. That is their strategy. They have the high-end supporting talent. Now they just need a couple more pieces. So I think that they were really smart to go all in this year. Between how well the core is clicking, and you look at, you know, the ages of some of their guys, like Hedman's 34, McDonough's 35, Kucherov's 31. Like, if you're not going to do it now, when are you going to do it? So to bring in guys like Bjorkstrand and Gord, I think it absolutely fills a need. And it's not just, okay, these are these players that have to play in this role. Like, the top nine, I think, has all these options to mix and match, figure out what combinations work on matchups, and the draft picks, the later problem. I really like how they've handled their draft picks. I think they've had the idea right before about how much draft picks should matter to them now, but maybe they overspent on the wrong players. Now it's like, okay, the thinking's right, the vision's there, and the application of it is spot on.
Shayna, I have this theory about the Tampa Bay Lightning's moves that I want to run by you and get your reaction to, because it's a little bit galaxy brain, but I think it's true.
Okay, let's go.
Okay. I like extreme actions in the NHL. If you're close to the top, the marginal value added by going all in makes sense to me. If you're at the bottom, you know, subtracting value makes sense to me. With the Lightning, though, I think what you're seeing is like preparation for that. Like, you might as well trade all these firsts when you, in your going for it window, in part because by the time Hedman, Kucherov, by the time the age cliff comes for those guys, like, the last thing you want in your lineup is a late first rounder that's hit and is now a 64-point 23-year-old player, because he's going to be the difference between you picking first and picking 8th or 10th or 12th. Like, you actually want to be as weak as possible on the other side of your contention window for a spell. And so I actually think in some ways, not only does this bolster Tampa's win-now window, but it will quietly actually better position themselves to slingshot back up the standings once the party ends. What are your thoughts?
That's a bold take, and I kind of like it because, listen, like, everyone's afraid to rebuild, and they should be, right? You look at Chicago, you look at even San Jose or Anaheim, and you go, I don't want that for myself, and I can't blame anyone. But I think if you're a team like the Lightning, and you know you could do this right, it takes a lot of patience. You have to be really bad, but then you can become really, really good. Like, the potential is there. You look at how many players they found from within, and yes, Victor Hedman, Steven Stamkos, those are top picks. Kucherov wasn't. Point wasn't. I think they're an organization that knows they can also spot talent later in the draft, and they can find undrafted talent too. Like, you think of the old days of the Lightning and Tyler Johnson as this undrafted forward. Like, they were able to find these hidden gems. Like, Yanni Gord's one of them. So I think it's a good strategy because you can try to build through the draft at a later date. It's going to get tricky if they start moving out any more first rounders at this point, though, right? Like, I think any acquiring team should look at them and say, oh, you want to give away your 2027 first? Like, that, we'll take that yesterday because you're not going to be good that good then. But now is the time I'd be like, this is your cutoff. You know, like, maybe if they don't win it all this year, they make one more move next year, at least Bjorkstrand, they get two playoff runs out of. But that 2028 or 2029 first, like, those are the ones you really need to hang on to because you're going to be bad by then. So those picks are going to be valuable. So it's like to know when to cut it off and say, okay, we're going to be really bad. This is how we're going to get really good again. Have that kind of plan. And all the while, potentially wearing three Stanley Cups while you're Stanley Cup rings while you're doing it, go off.
Does the road to the Stanley Cup run through Florida?
I think so. I'm going to be really disappointed here if it's Battle Florida in round one. And I know people like it better in round one because everyone's healthier and they can go head to head and it's better and they might be beaten down by round two. Like, I don't care. I don't want it in round two. Give me Tampa, Toronto, round one. Give me Tampa, Florida, round two. Then whoever from the Metro is there. And I still would favor either Florida team. It's not a knock to Carolina or Washington or if anyone else can surprise. But I just feel like those are the teams to beat in the East. And maybe that's boring because they've been the teams to go to the Stanley Cup final the last few years. It's really been Florida-centric, but for good reason.
So I want to talk Rangers a little bit. It was the second leg of a back-to-back, but, you know, as much as we can point to Anaheim and Chicago and some of those teams that have mismanaged their rebuild, you know, I think we can also point to, for example, the team the Canucks are playing tonight, Montreal, they were in the Cup final 4 years ago. Yeah, it's an exciting young team on the verge of a playoffs, of the playoffs. You've got the Columbus Blue Jackets, who just absolutely demolished the Rangers on Sunday. Now, second leg of a back-to-back, flu bug going through the Rangers. I don't know that that's representative of who this Rangers team will be down the stretch necessarily, but does this Rangers team have a high enough gear to really hold off some of these Columbus, Ottawa, some of those younger teams in the East that frankly are playing and controlling play better than they are?
If you go by the numbers, the answer is going to be yes, because the priors of their elite talent is going to weigh enough to build confidence in them. If you go by just this year and the vibes and what you're watching, no. And it's going to be interesting to see if Adam Fox returns soon. I know he's getting a non-contact jersey. That's a pretty big addition, I would say, having him healthy. And I think he's been dealing with a couple things this year. So even when I don't think he's had as much like pop and flash to his game, which aren't really words you use to describe him, but I don't think it's been as eye-catching as years past because of it. So if he is actually healthy, that's a nice addition to have. And Panarin looks like himself, and Zibanejad's revitalized as the right winger he's been missing since they moved Pavel Buchnevich. Who saw that one coming? And Shesterkin is still Shesterkin. Like, the potential is there, sure, but this is a team that's been weak at 5-on-5 for a long time. And, you know, you could say moving out Ryan Lindgren was addition by subtraction. In a sense, it was the way his game was declining. And maybe they can get new energy from some of the younger talent in there. But I think the game against Columbus kind of showed what's going wrong for this team. Like, the special teams element is a huge advantage on both ends of the ice for them. 5-on-5 play just is not. And sometimes when it gets bad, it starts spiraling out of control. And that was what went wrong for them in November and in December. I don't think the coaching is great. I don't think the roster is great. So you put that together and go, you're probably going to have some problems unless the elite talent can save them. And that has been a question mark all year.
In the Western Conference, you had Colorado as the team to beat. You know, I know you said the popular pick is often Dallas. Now, that's another first-round matchup that it looks like we're going to get, even though probably a lot of people would take them as the top two teams in the Western Conference. So, I mean, let's start with Dallas. Just how important was it for them to get that Mikko Rantanen deal done? And how does that – I mean, it's wild that they're probably going to be matching up against Colorado now in the first round. How does that change the complexion of that matchup?
I know this is all Minnesota's fault, honestly. If they didn't fall off, like, this would not be a round one matchup.
Mm-hmm.
But we're being punished, so thanks, Wild. So adding Mikko Rantanen, I think, made the Dallas Stars have probably the deepest forward group in the league. They look amazing now. You look at their team year after year and go, wow, they're so deep, and there's so many different types of talents in there, and it's really versatile, this lineup. There's a lot of people who can play center. Like, you can mix and match pieces. Oh, that's great and wonderful, but at the end of the day, you look at that first line, especially in the beginning of the year, and go, well, they weren't playing like a first line. You know, Robertson and Hintz started slow. The Duchesne line was picking up for them, and then Tyler Seguin gets hurt, and it could have gotten a little chaotic there. But I think they found ways to stabilize things for now and in the long run. So, to me, that's the team to beat up front. Having Rantanen is huge because he's a fantastic player. No, he didn't look great with the Canes at all, and a lot was made of his scoring. I don't think it was that dramatic, but everything was off. That's okay. He'll go to Dallas, and maybe he can get back to those Colorado heights. I think if they match him with Wyatt Johnston, and now they are because of that injury to Hintz, I think it's going to give them a chance to develop early chemistry. Like, to me, that is a combination to watch. I think Wyatt Johnston's a better passer than we give him credit for because he doesn't get a ton of assists. He's more of a scoring chance creator. And I think his right-handedness might help Rantanen because that was an issue with the Canes, that Aho is a lefty and he's so used to a righty, and whatever you can do to ease the transition. So I feel like there's a ton of potential here. Factor that in with a healthy Haskinen and having Thomas Harley, who is absolutely sick, on the back end, and they look a lot better. And Jake Ottinger is playing really well. The depth defense is the one weakness. Like, you look at that and you go, do you want CeCe playing big minutes? Absolutely not. Dumba, nope. Brendan Smith, nope. Like, Lyubushkin, none of those. Like, that is what holds the team back a little bit. But then you look at Colorado and say, well, they have the same issue, potentially, depending on how things work out post-deadline here and how Lindgren fits and if it can help Girard and Manson. So maybe that's going to, like, neutralize it, and then it'll just be head-to-head with their strength, and maybe the Stars have that slight edge. But they look great.
A lot of attention in this market, obviously, on the Western Conference wild card race. The Canucks play the second leg of a back-to-back against the Calgary Flames tomorrow, which will be a fascinating four-point swing. How are you handicapping sort of the four teams hanging around in the West at the moment?
Yeah, they're all very intriguing because not one of them did something to make themselves better to this stretch run, right? Like, not one. I really thought Utah was going to do something. They were the team I've been watching all year going, okay, ownership saying, let's go big. And their offseason said they're willing to do it, and nothing. But they got their own reinforcements, right? Because they're healthy. You have Gunther back, Cooley back, Thursday on the back end. There's something there. So I like their young guns. I like how Cooley's progressing. I really like Barrett Hayton. I think he's finally hitting his stride. And Vemelka's been great. So they have a good chance based on that, but you know, you need to win every game. Coming back against Toronto last night, getting that point is big, but, you know, at a certain point, you're looking at everybody else in that same picture, and a lot of teams are trending up. The Flames have Dustin Wolf. He is everything for them. If he can help the fact that the Flames don't generate enough offense, put him in the Hart Trophy race at this point. Like, I'm all about it. I think he's not getting nearly enough hype, and I think if he played in the East, he probably would, but the Blues are interesting because their 5-on-5 game is great. I think losing Colton Parayko really hurts them right now, but the 5-on-5 play, guys like Thomas are going really well. Fowler was good there. Holloway's been a great addition. Their special teams is what's going to crush them, though. So it's going to be interesting to see how they manage that down the stretch because they've really figured things out under Jim Montgomery at even strength. And then you have the Canucks. And I mean, it's all about Quinn Hughes, right? If he can come back, if he can be healthy, if he can be their difference maker, it's their spot to lose. Until that happens, I look at it and go, no. And I think, honestly, like, they're better off just not making it instead of getting that false hope of, like, a first round, you know, playoff experience. I think teams like the Blues, the Flames, and Utah all could use that experience to play meaningful hockey down the stretch and in round one. The Canucks, they got it last year, and they did nothing with it this year. I feel like they need the badge to remind themselves, like, this was a terrible season, do better.
What was your reaction to the lack of activity for the Canucks at the trade deadline?
They were the most disappointing team in the league. Like, hands down, the most disappointing team in the league. And that's saying something. I think the whole Pacific Division let me down.
Yes.
I wanted to see the Kings do more. The Oilers, I liked it. It was a good start, but I'm like, that should not be everything. And I was fine with Vegas doing nothing for a change. Why not? But Vancouver was a team.
Riley Smith erasure. They got the band back together.
I like it. I think he's going to be great with Wild Bill. Put them together, let them kill penalties. Like, Vegas won that third line was huge for them because they didn't set it up that they had three good lines. It was like three good forward pairings and then mix that third player around. Like, I love that strategy for them. But for Vancouver, should you have bought a rental? Absolutely not. Like, you're not in a position to do that. Sorry, you're not good enough. But if you don't see a future with Brock Besser, then you need to figure that out. And I don't even like, down to the press conference afterwards, I was annoyed because there's a way to say you didn't get offered anything good for Brock Besser. That wasn't it. That is a let me spoil relations and push down his worth. Like, I get it. If you're management, you want to get him as cheap as possible, but that was not it. The vibes of this team are atrocious this year, and every time they have a chance to try to change that, they just dig a deeper hole. So I just don't understand what the thinking was.
Yeah, there was a lot of that sentiment here in the market as well on Friday, Shayna, and over the weekend. Thanks, as always, for doing this. Always a pleasure. We'll chat again soon.
Thanks for having me.
That is Shayna Goldman from The Athletic, weighing in as the Canucks. They're the most disappointing team for her around the league at the trade deadline.
I think that's fair. I think the disappointment compounds. I think her point is well taken, too. I mean, I think that was, you know, I hadn't considered it myself, and I wish I had, because, you know, Shayna's more insightful than me. But I do think part of the reason that there was such an emotional reaction to the deadline passing with nothing else was in part that it felt like you can salvage this, you know, do yeah. something. And when that didn't happen, it was like, oh, really? This is just a mid season. Like, that's locked in. There's no sense of a grand plan out of this, you know? And by the way, that's fine. Like, you don't have to have the answers at the deadline. That's not what we're saying, but I think it was a feeling that this market had. You know, I was calling it confidence shaking, but I think her point that it was like the final nail on this mediocrity sandwich that we've been, it's like a foot long sandwich. We've been like slowly eating it all year. You know, it was kind of the thing that secured that bag.
Yes. And also, again, just the idea of the missed opportunity. It's not, for me, it's not just about not selling Besser or not selling Suter. It's the opportunity just generally to reposition yourself going into the summer, to give yourself a better chance of landing that impact forward that, as we all know, you desperately, desperately need to find going forward. It's just the totality of it is tough to take. And then, as she says, the commentary after, right, which just seemed like an unforced error. And then we talked about the reporting from Frank Saravalli that it did do damage to the relationship as well. So
how could it not?
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
I mean, especially considering, right, like, they're all already with the, hey, he's got to give us more. We felt he took his foot off the gas last year. He could have scored even more. He could have scored 50 goals instead of 40. I mean, and that's all fine. It's fine to challenge the player. You just also have to know there's risks that are associated with it, right? And I think we saw some of those chickens come home to roost on Friday with that commentary. But they're still here. Everyone's still here. Everyone is trying to make the playoffs still, and they will get well, not get started. They're already started, but they'll continue that effort tonight against Montreal at Rogers Arena. First of a back-to-back set. Of course, they will go to Calgary to play the Flames tomorrow. And I thought Shana made a great point about, you know, again, for all of the offensive struggles here in Vancouver, Calgary is very much in the same boat. They desperately struggle to score, and really the number one reason they're in a playoff position, the number one reason they have a chance to make the playoffs, is the performance of Dustin Wolf. That's going to be a tough problem for the Canucks to solve tomorrow, and it's going to be a huge, huge factor in deciding who makes the playoffs in that second wildcard spot in the Western Conference. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown Beat, Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. We'll take a break here. We'll come back. We will hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet talking to the media before his team's game against the Montreal Canadiens tonight. That's next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. AllLabels.com offering years of expertise, lightning fast turnaround, best in class pricing, all from a proudly Canadian-owned company, alllabels.com. Make your product sing. It is a Canucks game day. Of course, they're hosting the Montreal Canadiens at Rogers Arena. The team had a full morning skate today. And, of course, Rick Tocchet addressed the media afterwards. Here is the Canucks head coach.
No kidding aside, Derek Forsberg. You know, he's a I thought he's done a great job as a leader. And even if you don't have an A on, you're still a leader. But he's done a really good job for us.
Rick, great sign to see Quinn Hughes out there. He skated yesterday, skated again today. His status for today and tomorrow?
I don't know about status tomorrow, but it was a good day for him. You know, he obviously did a little bit more than he has done. He looked pretty good, but, you know, we didn't have contact drills and stuff like that, so it's hard to really evaluate that. But he felt really good yesterday, so we'll go from there.
You talked about real true practice all week. I think you guys are off Thursday. It's pretty hard with the schedule to imagine him really practicing until next week.
Yeah, it's a hard one. You know, this time of year, if it's November, December, you'd like a guy to get a practice or two. The things change sometimes, and we'll figure that out from here. You know, obviously, this has been a games left. You had to change a few things, protocols, but obviously, the safety of him is obviously number one.
So not in tonight, TBD going forward.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. Yep.
How has he reacted to pushing himself? Because you said you wanted to see how that would turn out for him the day after. He's done that now, back-to-back days.
Yeah, I think the frustrating part for him, he wants to go all the time. So I think the schedule of him skating some days, him not, has helped. And, you know, maybe not the mental part because he wants to play. But I think for overall, I think he had a couple of really good days. You know, he's got a smile on his face today. So that's a good sign.
Will he travel to Calgary?
We haven't even talked about that. We'll have to talk about it, right? Actually, I'll see how he is after the ice, and we'll go from there.
How about the goaltending? It looks like Kevin might start tonight.
Yeah, Langs is starting tonight.
So have you thought about back-to-back with him, given the importance of the Calgary game?
You know what? That's something we'll talk after the game. Like I said, you know, I thought last game, I think it was a low shot with volume game, so I don't think it was taxing that much. You have to look at that. I mean, if you have a big, you know, stress in front, a lot of shots, a lot of volume, then, you know, that's tough to play a guy back-to-back. But if it's a low-volume game, sometimes you look at that. I don't think I've ever done that in my coach career. I've talked to some other coaches, some other veteran coaches. Have they done that before? And they have, but you got to pick your spots.
Aside from the value of Quinn, what does it mean to see Junior, Pettersson, and Marcus come in and play such important roles to your defense. I mean, yeah, you guys really haven't lost a beat there on the back end when you defend it.
Well, I think in this league, if you can cultivate like young defensemen early on, you got to be careful. Like Footy always talks about young defense. You don't want to throw him in the fire too quick. But I think he's taking little bites here and there. I think he's done a really nice job. I just think that he's a guy that's really taken information well, and he's got all the attributes of a really good two-way defenseman.
Offensively, are you looking at the collective? Because, you know, let's be honest, nobody's really lighting it up outside of Nebraska. Are you looking at the collective down the stretch here in terms of trying to generate offense?
Yeah, I mean, we're a committee. You know, it's a four-line team, and we need production from everybody. But obviously, we talked about certain guys. They got to, especially that power play, you know, you got to come up with some of these things. And I think it's about body position. It's about, there's a lot of different factors. I'm not going to bore you guys, but I think that they understand that there's got to be some urgency. You know, if you're that second guy going downhill on a rebound, those are the ones you got to put in. I think sometimes we're guessing which way the puck goes. I think if you just stay in the middle of the ice, that's just from my experience, play the odds. And you know, those pucks will go in for you.
But having said that, how much do you need one or two guys to kind of light it up?
Well, you always want somebody to get hot. I mean, you look around the league, you know, there's always teams that are on winning streaks. There's always a guy that gets hot. Yeah, we're looking for a guy to get hot, but I don't want these guys to put pressure on them, because then you're going to squeeze the stick even more.
63 games in, though. Like, I mean, can you do any more as a coach to generate 5-on-5? It's not like you can change your systems now.
Well, you know, I think it's the you got to have not the courage, but the wherewithal when to attack the middle, when not, when to pass to this player, when not, when to take it to the net and when not. I think those are reads that you can tell players, but it's got to be instinctual. You know, there's three guys on one side of the net. You know, when you get it, I got to take it to the net. Why would I take it outside and then pass it to the defense? Like, those are just instinctual things that you want guys to. It's like Yogi said. We talked to Yogi was talking today. He did a great presentation about offense. You know, it's stuff we got to keep showing them, and we got to keep practicing and showing. That's how you get reps of that sort of stuff. And hitting the net, and shot location. That's a big part of scoring goals. You know, you can't miss the net, and you have to have shot location where your shot actually puts the other guy in a good position for a rebound. You know, a high shot in the glove when a guy's going the net is not a good shot. That's what I think.
You got the band back together with Teddy, Dakota, and Garland. Did you see chemistry at the end of last game that makes you think that, break out?
Yeah, I think, you look at who's a distributor, who's a transporter. You try to do that. I think I got to, like to get Best some speed on his line. Maybe Hedl and Jake can find some chemistry. Jake's kind of a shooter, and Hedl's can make plays to the neutral. And that's the thought process. But at the end of the day, everybody, you can mix lines and play a shell game, but you got to play better. We got to play better as a group.
Are the players here? A lot of these guys scored a year ago.
Who's that?
Do you have the group in that locker room to generate more?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's on me. It's on me and our staff. And we got, that's the thing. I mean, I got the Twins. I got Yogi. Sergei Gonchar is a Hall of Fame type of defenseman. Like, it's not like we're preaching these guys, and we got a lot of new guys. And there's a lot of guys that, you're trying to make them, you can't make a guy into a pure goal scorer, but you can make him into a guy that can up his offensive game. And it's on us to make that for sure. But I do like the way we're playing without the puck. We just got to create, and you get a 2-on-1. We'd like to score in some 2-on-1s. We'd like to score in the odd breakaway. Those are the ones that really separate. You look at Dallas, they didn't really have much going on. Boom, one rush. I think they had one rush chance. It's in the net. Those are the moments we're looking for. But you got to keep pounding it into the group that we can do it. You just got to believe in yourself.
The message we heard at the end of last game was players have to earn their ice time. Is that a message that was also preached to the players in the room, and how have they responded?
Well, if you want to change culture and you want to win and be an winning organization, you have to earn it. Like, you just don't – that's just the way you live. That's the way it is. If you can't hand stuff for stuff that's happened way in the past. And let's face it, we're trying to make become a winning club, right? And everybody's got to kind of earn their way. There's no, I hate the word entitlement. There's no entitlement around here. Who and that's not to say those three guys. I didn't call those three. It says those guys had low ice time. I felt that at that time, we weren't getting much from them. And I thought some other guys, you know, it was a tight game. I thought there was, you know, some guys that were really working hard. So, but listen, we're going to go anywhere. Those guys got to play. Don't get me wrong. They got to play. They're going to get played tonight. Hopefully they respond.
Drew O'Connor seemed to leave the morning skate early.
Him and Junior had a little bit of flu last night, so I kicked them off. So they were a little under the weather. Hopefully, so I wanted him to get some energy, you know, some rest.
Are they going to be in tonight then?
Yeah, they'll play tonight. Yeah.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking to the media before they take on the Habs tonight at Rogers Arena. A lot in there, off the top, including.
I feel bad for Rick Tocchet, man.
Well, here's the truth.
His top six has been outscored 2-12.
Mm-hmm.
Across the last eight games. There's no bad calls. There's no system. There's no points of emphasis. There's no pre-scout. There's no level of special teams excellence. There's no level of goaltending excellence that can disguise that. If you're losing with margin at the top of your lineup with your top two centermen on the ice, getting outscored by 10 goals at 5-on-5 across an eight-game stretch, you are dead in the water. Dead in the water. And look, I lump Hedl and Pettersson together here, and that's a little bit unfair. Hedl's at least driving play.
Mm-hmm.
The Canucks are at least out shooting and out chancing their opposition with Hedl on the ice. Hedl's been unfortunate from a shooting luck perspective. I also think he's been incredibly wasteful. In what they call in soccer, the final third. Right at the point of attack, the pass to create a chance or the shot, you know, that often wide, like that decision making he needs to sharpen up on. Pettersson? Man. Like,
who knows?
This is why I couldn't get too worked up about Pettersson's ice time against Dallas. The Canucks were as likely to score with their fourth line on the ice. I'm sorry, like they had one shot on goal in his 12 minutes. They gave up two goals against. Not two shots, two goals. More goals against than shots for. What are we talking about? Like, in a stretch in which the Canucks' top two forward lines have been outscored by 10 goals across eight games at 5-on-5, the Canucks still have three wins. That's incredible. Like, this should have been a period that absolutely, irrevocably buried the Canucks, given how their top players have performed. Even like Filip Hronek obviously had the exceptional pass to Kiefer Sherwood.
Yeah.
To steal one against the Wild. Do you know that's the only 5-on-5 goal he's been on the ice for since the Four Nations break ended?
Not ideal.
Like, what? Your best players need to outscore the opposition. And sometimes it's a simple game. And sometimes analyzing it is simple too. Vancouver isn't getting enough of their best players. And frankly, they've gotten just enough from Lankanen. They've gotten just enough from like the Myers Marcus Pettersson pair. They've gotten just enough
Derek
from Connor Forbort Garland.
Scored a goal, yeah.
And they've gotten just enough from a suddenly elite penalty kill.
Mm-hmm.
That they have punched above their weight given the performance of their best players. This week, you know, I don't want to put more pressure on them, squeezing their six too tight. This team is dead in the water in the Western Conference playoff race unless their best players get going. It is that simple. It is. Like, 5-on-5 goal differential. Pettersson, -6. Hronek, -6. Besser, -4. DeBrusk, -5. Goal differential. Hedl, -4. That's all since the Four Nations faceoff. Cannot continue. And by the way, I'm citing actual 5-on-5 goal differential, not plus minus. Plus minus is worse than on ice goal differential. Don't use it. So yeah, like, I just feel like we're watching this or hearing this. And the truth is, you know, I don't know. The truth is, yeah, I need my best players to be better.
Well, and it's not the
it's
interesting
instinctual,
thing about,
but yeah,
well, that's,
I mean,
the thing.
It's on me to.
So that's what I want to talk about, because
what are we
it's,
talking
obviously
about?
He needs his best players to be better. But also, you know, when asked about, hey, how do you go about generating more at 5-on-5? And what he says is, you know, guys have to have the wherewithal to know when to attack, to know when to pass, to know when to make certain plays, when to go into the inside, when not to, right? To make the read that, okay, hey, there's an opportunity here. I should take that opportunity, not just pack it, pass it back to the blue line, pass it back to the point. He says those are reads. It's instinctual. Now, he does say, well, look, we got to keep showing them and we got to keep, you know, working with them and trying to get them up a level here. But he's also just describing like offensive IQ, offensive hockey IQ, offensive sense, attacking sense, which is a pretty hard thing to coach. That's one of the big things beyond skill, which separates the great offensive players in the league from the other guys, from the average offensive players in the league. So if you're saying it's primarily a problem of guys not making the right reads, guys not in the moment figuring out I should attack the middle or I should dish off or, hey, there's an opening here. If I attack, we're going to get a good opportunity. That's a really hard thing to fix through coaching, through systems play. That's, to a certain degree, that's just kind of inherent in the players. And that's the closest, I think, that Tockett has come to, not saying outright, but maybe alluding to the idea that, hey, we just don't have the personnel. We do not have the personnel to be an above average offensive team, or maybe even an average offensive team. Now, he was asked a follow-up question along those lines. Do you have the guys? Are the players here? And to be fair to him, he is not pointing the fingers, right? And he's continuing to take on that responsibility. It's on me. It's on the staff. He says he's got the Sedin twins. He's got Yogi. He does acknowledge, look, you're never going to turn a guy into a pure goal scorer, but there are, he does think there's things you can do to up his offensive game, and that's the coaching staff's responsibility. But there's also so much, there's only so much juice you can squeeze out of that lemon, right? Like there's only so much you can get from players if they don't have the ability to make those high-end offensive reads. And I think that's the most direct acknowledgement of some of the roster limitations I think we've heard Rick Tockett make this year. And again, I want to be clear, he's not actually pointing the finger because he still takes on the accountability and the responsibility himself. So I don't think he's throwing his guys under the bus or anything like that here. But considering some of the frustration we've seen from Rick Tockett, I think it's notable that he is alluding to the fact that, like, hey, we're just not making reads. We don't know when to attack and when to pass, and it's really hard to be good offensively if that's an issue.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, look, I don't love the way that this Canucks team has decided to play, aesthetically speaking. Okay? I'm not someone who wants to reflexively defend coaches and blame players by any means. That's sort of kind of antithetical to how I go, but I do think you always have to start with the personnel. From trying to understand what's going on, you got to start with who's on the ice. And, you know, I think that Filip Hedl has a shot to get going here, right? Like, to me, yes, I think there's been some decision-making gaps in his attacking play, but also he's been brutally unlucky. And one of the things is that if you're generating even chances at chances and it's just not quite connecting for you, like, there's an element to which, as much as finishing luck comes and goes and can be a bit volatile, creating scoring chances can be too, right? If you're an inch off on having 10 excellent scoring chances across the last 5-6 games, which I think Hedl is, you know, your next 10 game segment, you might connect on those, right? Those might connect for you. And if that happens, I think you're going to start to see sort of the mass of what he's beginning to create in terms of carrying the puck through the neutral zone and attacking with pace. I think you're going to begin to see that turn in his favor. Now you've got to get the mass working for Pettersson, without question. And other than that Minnesota game where the club actually had meaningful chances, I don't know. Well, he hasn't had the mass in his favor, right? The Canucks just haven't been in the offensive end enough with Pettersson on the ice 5-on-5. So that one's a little more complicated. There is some bad shooting luck there. You'd still expect him to score more 5-on-5, or the Canucks to score more with him on the ice 5-on-5 than he has over this last stretch. But you got to start with the personnel. And right now, Vancouver's best players are, in my mind anyway, the primary issue that this team is having offensively.
They're not scoring goals. And frankly, without the Hedl line on the ice or Connor Garland, they're not generating enough chances either with their most skilled players on the ice.
This text comes in. They don't have the worst team in the league. That's where the expected goals for is. Dead last, address that issue. I don't care if their players suck and they're minus 50 on goals for, but just get some expected goals for. That's on the system. Okay, if you, like, just take a, hold on, take a step back and look at this forward group with this version of Elias Pettersson. So factor in that it's this version of Elias Pettersson and not elite Elias Pettersson. What level, all-encompassing, from the beginning of the year to now, would you say Elias Pettersson has been at this year? Third line center?
Yeah.
Okay. Filip Hedl, until he was brought to Vancouver, has always been a third line center.
Sure, but we, in a Rangers organization that doesn't know what they're doing with young players.
Okay, so do you think he's a bona fide second-line center?
I think he's a second-line caliber player.
Okay, so they've got a second-line caliber player. They've got a third-line...
At least fringe second-line caliber.
Fringe, yeah, not like a no doubt. You feel really great about it.
He hasn't established himself as that, but I think he can have second-line impact.
But we can give him a second-line second-line center. Yep. But low-end second-line center.
In which case, we probably got to give it to Pettersson, too. Two low-end second-line center contributors this season. Yeah, no, I know.
It's and not, then Teddy Bluger, who's more of a fourth-line guy.
Definitely more of a fourth-line
guy. And Pugh Suter, who we all like, but again,
I'll ride for Pugh Suter as a second-line caliber
second-line center, it's...
Yeah, I'd
you
rather,
know what I mean? Like, third-line center, you really like it.
Or second-line wing, I'm totally comfortable with.
Yeah.
Second-line center, I'd rather have him in the bottom six.
So you start to look around forward groups around the league, and maybe they're not the worst in the league, but it's not good. And just go around and, like, how many teams have a forward more dangerous offensively than the Canucks' most dangerous forward? Almost all of them.
Yeah.
Almost every team. Montreal does tonight.
Oh, for sure.
At least two. Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki.
Wow, Caulfield for sure. And
I think Nick Suzuki's more dangerous. If he, again,
right now he is.
With this version of Elias Pettersson.
Yes, right now he is.
Factor that in.
Yeah. That downhill wrist shot that he can uncork too, like, that's a really efficient weapon.
And Montreal's not a high fly. And I know you said they have the unique style and everything, but in terms of results, they're not like an elite offensive team.
No.
They have two players more dangerous offensively than any player on the Canucks.
I think that's fair.
And you do that exercise for a lot of teams, and you're going to come up with guys who are more dangerous than any forward on the Canucks once you factor in this version of Elias Pettersson. So, look, I don't know if it's worst in the league or anything like that. Are they making some tactical choices that limit their offensive ceiling but increase their defensive floor? Yeah, of course they are. But the idea that there's, if you stack up this personnel group at forward with teams around the league, it's not good. It is very much a personnel issue. Brandon in Vancouver says our team feels like the Seattle Kraken, but with Quinn Hughes. That's a comparison I made a couple of weeks ago when you were off, right? Like,
yeah, except Shane Wright's more dangerous.
Once you kind of give up the ghost, at least for this season, on Elias Pettersson being elite, and you trade JT Miller, it's an expansion type group of forwards where it's like, there's good players. Don't get me wrong. There's good players who could help a team win, but you're missing that top level of talent, that top layer of talent that slots everyone into the right place and really drives things. That's what they're dealing with right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And here's the last thing about the problem with, so the Canucks expected goal totals are low, are very poor. They were low last year too, by the way, right? Like, this team was never generating a massive amount, but just as a general rule, right? In terms of the rate at which they're generating, and you're relying, first of all, you're also relying on public expected goals numbers, which are dubious, and there's a reason I don't tend to. Yeah, the Canucks rank 30th in the league in terms of the rate at which they're generating expected goals. However, they prevent them so well that the differential is 18th, which, by the way, is better than Calgary. It's better than the Blues. It is not better than the Utah Hockey Club, of course, but it is better than the Blues and the Flames, two of the teams in the Chase Pack.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. Like, it's always important to remember that hockey is not a game of raw numbers. It's a game of ratios. Vital if you're trying to understand this game. Scoring 6 goals is great unless you lose 7-6. The point is, do you create an atmosphere or an environment where you're more likely to score the next goal? That's everything. That's everything in terms of how we should, in my opinion, try to objectively and strive to objectively measure team quality. And by that measure, the Canucks are, at least 5-on-5, about average. They're about an average team. In fact, they're roughly what their record suggests they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's crucial here. It would be one thing if the Canucks couldn't score and, like a team, you know, the Blackhawks or the San Jose Sharks or the Ducks are also giving up, and by the way, the Kraken, are giving up a ton more than they generate themselves, but they're not. They're coming out very close to even with an elite penalty kill and good goaltending. Well, that should be enough. Like, that should be enough to earn you 2 points against a Montreal Canadiens team. That should be enough to go toe-to-toe with the Calgary Flames on the second leg of a back-to-back. It definitely should be enough to beat the Chicago Blackhawks on home ice. And hopefully you can hang tough against a Utah Hockey Club that is materially better. But that's where we're at. Like, that's, this team is not 31st in the league at generating scoring chance. I mean, they are, but they're, the way to look at it is not they're one of the worst teams in the league because they can't generate scoring chances. It's that, yeah, they struggle to score, and that's a huge problem preventing them from being an elite team. But they're so good defensively that they're still coming out roughly even because they're mostly controlling play. That's the way to look at it.
And for me, it's obviously there. If Rick Tocchet woke up today and decided all I care about is us generating more chances, of course there are things the team could do differently. I just fundamentally believe that they would give it up on the other end, that it would not be a winning trade-off for them to go all out in favor of offense with this group and sacrifice that defensive stability. I don't think they have the pieces. And again, I think once you start to kind of accurately assess where some of their top players are relative to the rest of the league right now, we'll see if that remains the case with Elias Pettersson going forward. It's hard not to see the limitations of the roster, especially with Quinn Hughes on the shelf, because we know how absolutely vital he's been to what they're doing. All right, we'll take a break here. Keep your thoughts coming in. There's lots of good text coming into the Dunbar Lumber text line. 650-650 is the number for you to contribute to the conversation. We will dive into some of those next. It's our final segment coming up here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Janpro, from showrooms to stockrooms, and everything in between, Janpro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. As mentioned, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And lots of thoughts coming in about the lack of offense and the how much of that is Rick Tocchet's fault? How much of that is the players' faults, et cetera?
All of it.
And
it's all on Tocchet.
And one thing that comes up a fair amount is just the idea of Tocchet not giving offensive players, right, the ability to succeed. And we have people pointing out, like, oh, they got rid of Kuzmenko and they got rid of Daniel Sprong. I mean, Andre Kuzmenko has like 6 goals this year, playing for non-Rick Tocchet coaches.
Yeah, I'm sorry you guys got fooled by what Kuzmenko is.
Did Daniel Sprong, like, how many NHL games has Daniel Sprong played this year?
Very few, but Daniel Sprong is sick.
He's got a good offense. Like,
it is too bad that this team did not have Daniel Sprong as an occasional game breaker and a fourth line guy.
He also has,
and I think it's a tragedy that he never got sent trialed on the top power play unit.
He also has 2 goals in 20 NHL games this year.
Yep.
So this is not like dissatisfaction with Daniel Sprong.
Correct.
If you're looking for the NHL coach that will not succumb to that, They haven't found him yet. Daniel Sprong has not found him yet, right?
Hey, I'm still going to ride for Daniel Sprong as one of the sickest depth goal scorers in the league. But, yeah, I mean, this is small potatoes stuff. You know yes. what I mean? Like, it's like I think the Canucks could have found a role for Erik Brännström. I think the best version of this team before the reset included Brännström in the lineup because I think they needed three defenders that can move the puck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, doesn't mean I think Brännström is more than a 6'7 guy. Maybe 7'8 guy.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that this team needed him. Okay, well, that's a minor quibble with some of Tockett's deployment or tactical choices, and fair enough. I believe it. But, you know, to extrapolate, like, the Arizona thing and on, I think is missing the point. You know, this team, perception of this team has ebbed and flowed mostly with the most volatile elements of the game. When this team has finished at an extraordinary rate, when they've gotten all the calls the way they did during the Bruce There It Is bump, when their goaltending has been stellar, as it was during the Bruce There It Is bump and throughout last season and, you know, during the bubble run, this team can look pretty good. But if you're relying solely on finishing efficiency and goaltending excellence to win games in this league, over time, it's really hard to sustain the sort of success that this team aspires to first and foremost, like even more than icing a championship contender, right? That's what this team wants. Every year, be a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's hard to do if you don't control play 5-on-5. Okay, it's really hard to do. You need to dominate 5-on-5 play to insulate yourself from the whims, the cruel whims of the hockey gods. Even in this game that we play now, which is less possession-based and more about shooting efficiency, that still matters. And the truth is that at no point during this sort of era of Canucks hockey, let's call it the Pettersson-Hughes era, have the Canucks profiled like a team capable of doing this. However, the closest they've come is in the, what are we at now? 60 games into the season, he coached 30, 170 plus games of Rick Tocchet's head mm-hmm. coaching tenure. The moment he showed up, this team began to control play 5-on-5 and limit chances against better than they ever had with this basic core group, which obviously has been modified pretty significantly over the course of this year, but, you know, let's call it the Hughes-PD era, okay? And that's been true even through injuries or, like, the blue line that they cobbled together that first year that Tockett was here with, like, Akito Hirose and
mm-hmm.
Lots of Christian Wilanen, steady diet of Christian Wilanen. They controlled play better then than they had under Boudreaux previously. Last year, they controlled play really well and spiked as the year went on, right? They got better as the year went on, even and thus had some sort of floor that held them up even as the shooting luck abandoned them. And as Demko got injured and they had to soldier on without him. This year, still, their 5-on-5 profile is mid, and early in the year, before I think the season got waylaid by, you know, dysfunction, was actually pretty good. That's what matters to me. I think Rick Tockett, as a head coach, has an impact on his team's ability to create that environment where they're more likely than their opponents to score the next goal. I don't think he's a perfect coach, but I think he's a very, very good coach. I see no argument for him being any less than average, and I think he's better than that. Like, now, this market loves to turn on really good head coaches. I think we saw it with Travis Green. I think we saw it with Bruce Boudreaux. And I think both guys know their way through NHL games. I think you can win with both bench bosses. They have different strengths and weaknesses. Green is more to my taste because of the matchup discipline and tactical detail. But, you know, I'm not going to argue with Bruce Boudreaux's career track record and the vibes that he brings. I think you can win with that, too. There's lots of different ways to win in the NHL. Tockett, I think, marries, you know, a higher level of EQ than Travis Green had. Less matchup discipline, but equal tactical excellence. Okay. That works. You know, that to me is what it comes down to. Tockett has a meaningful impact on his team's ability to control play 5-on-5. That's what you're looking for in a head coach, and that's what the Canucks have got consistently from this bench boss.
By the way, Brandon in Vancouver on Daniel Sprong texts in, 2 goals in 20 games. Sounds like he'd fit right in. which is a good point. He was the perfect Canucks player.
I mean, how many Canucks forwards have
are on
than,
like a 2-20 streak?
How many Canucks
pretty much
forwards,
all of them.
Yeah. How many Canucks forwards have more than 2 goals their last 20 games?
I don't even want to think about it.
He might be a top line player on this team.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
And on that,
and I know you know that I'm serious.
On that point on personnel, Birdie's Sideburns on Twitter says it sounds like looking ahead to the offseason, they say they could really use a third line center who could move up to 2C in a pinch. I mean, I'd say they just need a top 6 center. Pending Elias Pettersson, you might need a number 1 center as well. But let's say they need a top 6 center. And Birdie Sideburns says top 6
four.
Winger
the
or
number
two.
Is four. Four forwards with more than 2 goals
in their last 20 games.
Pugh Suter, 5. He's also, Brock Besser leads all forwards in points the last 20 games with 11.
That's wild.
So as much as people have been like, in the 28 games since Besser was called out, you know, have you seen that narrative?
Yeah. Dan Riccio.
Right.
Just name him. It's all right.
I honestly didn't know it was Dastardly Dan, and I appreciate you crediting the villainous name Wow, I can't believe you laser sounded over me using villainous knave on the radio. I was so excited. Anyway, Besser leads with 11 points over that span. Pugh Suter with 10, 5 goals. Garland, 5 goals, 3 assists. Jake DeBrusque, 5 goals, 2 assists. Yikes.
Man, that is grim. That is grim.
Real tough.
Anyways, on that point, Birdie Sideburn says a third line center who can play 2C in a pinch. I'm upgrading that straight up to a second line center and a top 6 winger or two. They say, do you see a world we can trade to fill those spots with our assets? Is UFA in play as well? And that's the reason why the deadline felt like such a missed opportunity to me. I see a lot of people saying, turning this into some sort of like rebuild versus not debate. Like,
no,
you're trading Besser. That's a no. Trading Besser has nothing to do with rebuilding. Trading Besser, if you don't think he's a needle moving player for you, right? If he's not filling one of those top 6 winger spots or top line winger spots that you need filled, trading Besser, the theory behind it was about getting in assets that you could use to make a splash, to go out and find an impact player, not years down the road. Either at the deadline or in the summer. So you're going into next season having turned those assets in to an impact player. Because Birdie's Sideburns on Twitter makes a great point, which is it's great for the Canucks to be in on, you know, young potential impact player X that comes available. But if you're making Vlander and Lekkomäki and even Elias Pettersson untouchable, you don't have a lot of assets to play with. To go get those players. You desperately needed more assets.
Correct.
That perhaps you could have gotten from trading Brock Besser or trading Pugh Suter to go play in that market. And so I think the Birdie Sideburns makes a good point on Twitter. Like, what's the path? What's the most reasonable path to going and finding those top of the lineup players, considering the assets, considering the UFA market? Like Sam Bennett, he's going to be a name, but like, does Sam Bennett fix your scoring issues? He's not a high end offensive player.
I never had 50 in a season.
Love the player.
Oh no.
Love the
national
player.
National hero. Sam Bennett, Doug Ford, put them on my money.
But it's just you're not. you're not fixing. Like if the question you're asking is, man, we just don't have a lot of high-end offensive players. We desperately need to generate more. Like, Sam Bennett's not the answer.
No.
He's the answer to a very different question.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, a part of me is like, yeah, go get Sam Bennett. He's awesome. But it's just
super cool.
That's not solving the issue. Nick Ehlers, okay. Mitch Marner, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Now we're cooking,
but, you know, like, a lot of teams are going to be interested in those guys, and a lot of teams are going to offer them a lot of money. Might be the best bet is to try to go all out and do that. But I think the tweeter makes a very good point, which is the big part of the frustration around the trade deadline is, okay, what's the path? What's the plan? My plan was always, what I saw as the kind of ideal path forward was take those assets you get for Brock Besser, package it up, and go find the most intriguing potential impact young player you can get, and then pair that with a big free agent splash. You know what I mean? Like, it was a,
yeah,
like, you're probably not going to get both guys in free agency. You can probably not going to get both guys in trade. Can you do one big trade and one big free agency splash?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just harder to do that now.
Well, I think the truth is that no one's talking about a rebuild right now because we're all pretty focused on the indisputable logic that this team needs to take the necessary steps to bounce back significantly for the purpose of appealing to Quinn Hughes,
yes,
in his final season before expansion,
yes,
eligibility. Like, there's no one at this juncture calling for a rebuild. They have the best defender on the planet, and the priority has to be to keep the best defender on the planet.
There's no rebuild until you cross the Quinn Hughes is leaving bridge.
Correct.
And then that triggers it.
And then once you're past that, the question becomes, how do you surround him with enough talent? And at that point, you might need to make some more future-oriented moves. But first, you know, there's the retail aspect. There's the need to keep him around. And, you know, you can't do that and sell off parts to some extent. Or at least if you do, you have to take a quantum step forward in terms of the talent level of this group next season. Selling at the deadline, it was about aiding that, right? It was more about the St. Louis Blues selling in 2018. You know what I mean? The year before they rocket shipped from the bottom of the standings to the Stanley Cup in 2019. Mm-hmm. It was more about the Dmitry Orlov trade, and then you trade for Rasmus Sandin, the Washington Capitals retool model, than it was about anything else.
Yes.
Like, you know, I think that's where we look at the deadline and say missed opportunity, as opposed to, you know, devastating, illogical, unreasonable approach from the team, right? Not trading pieces when you're eighth in the conference by point percentage, as the Canucks were on deadline day itself. I think we all understand that, right? It's just that, is that dramatic enough given the state, given the environment that the Canucks find themselves in?
Yeah, and then what's the path forward to getting those players now that the deadline has passed and you're in a new reality? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, by the way. Somebody said, tell Dranson Riccio to take it outside to the crosswalk, where all of the best confrontations come.
Do you want to read the letter?
I don't know. Do you
it's
want
actually
me to?
Exactly 1:47, so it's exactly 24 hours afterwards.
Should we read the...
Should I issue a public apology at the exact same time? A public apology from me for telling an amusing story in which I did nothing wrong.
We'll set it up. If you didn't listen to the show yesterday, at almost exactly this time, and we know because the complaint I'm about to read recorded it, Drance told a story about getting into a minor argument as he was crossing the street and a fellow in a BMW was honking on him. Honking at him.
He was honking on me, too.
It's honking at you. And anyways, this complaint came into the 650 contact line, which goes direct to Cam Barra, and Cam shared it with us because it's very funny. So I'll read the complaint. Whoever was on 650 Vancouver on March 10th, 2025 at 1:47 p.m. talking about how he broke...
It sounds official.
Yes, that's right. How he broke the law by illegally crossing the street and then began to instigate a road rage incident should be ashamed of himself. Absolutely a petty display of his immaturity. And what kind of producer allows him to continue talking about this topic even after his co-host says... This is not how you grow your audience.
Stop. I would just like to say I was not present.
By the way, I'm the only person unscathed from this. The producers are on blast. Trance is on blast.
Our job is to be lambs to the slaughter on air. What are you talking about?
This had nothing to do with sports. Actually, it was part of an analogy, kind of. Anyways, and only showcased a ridiculous host you have on your network. Then he had the audacity to double down on his rant and go on about how he likes to go and ruin the days of people and their relationships by doing what he does. Some quote along the lines of, I had the power to make his wife so unhappy she'll ruin the rest of his day. Embarrassing content on display, Sportsnet. And by the way, Barra forwarded this to me with the caption, I fully expected to get complaints from listeners about Drance, but just not like this.
It's the Thomas Drance experience.
Getting called to the carpet, Drance, for your illegal activity.
So once upon a time when I was young and stupid, we're going to do Drance story time again.
As opposed to now when you're old and stupid.
As opposed to now when I'm old and foolish.
Okay.
A crucial distinction. I went down to Mount Baker on Canada Day with some friends, and we were doing what men in their young 20s do. We took a dock.
Sure.
That was on the property, and we untied it, and we dragged it into the center of the lake, and we were standing on the lake drinking beers. We had a BB gun that we'd attached a
living that life
that we'd attached a scope to, and we were, you know, firing it in the air and firing it at beers and then shotgunning the beers. And my buddy had, who's a hunter, it's a hunting lodge, had recently bagged his first deer, and his dad had mounted it for him. Now, over the course of this weekend, we named the deer Fred. Fred became the mascot of the weekend. And, you know, it wasn't like uncommon to see someone in one of those two people paddle boats paddling around with Fred just going in a circle. Fred was the mascot for the weekend. Normal stuff, more or less.
Yeah.
And so we go back inside, and I'll never forget it. I go to check and see if the hot dogs are de-thawed before grilling them. And I look out the window, and storming the property, a SWAT team in full tactical gear. Now, the thing I did next was the stupidest thing I did that day, which was I ran outside freaking out with my hands waving above my head.
Yeah, not a great move.
I know now, having gone through a various law enforcement training in my capacity as an executive with the Florida Panthers, that that is something that can trigger a fear response from law enforcement, right? You, what you want to do is stay still, basically. But luckily, I wasn't in any way pelted by less than lethal beanbag force, mm-hmm. which is what those gentlemen were armed with. Effectively, calls had come in from across the lake accusing us of playing with a deer carcass and firing a real weapon in the center of the lake. So they took this very seriously, not quite sure what they would find, potential cultists on the lake in Mount Baker. So they arrived, you know, fully ready to go. Once this was explained and the BB gun identified and you know, there were no weapons in the house and we were all of age, right? Once it was clear that nothing had happened, the final engagement, before the cops decided to, you know, just make fun of us and leave us with no charges or any further problems to our day, was I noted, officers, there's a distinction, there's a line between being morons and behaving illegally, and it's a line we haven't crossed. And I want to be very clear, in this instance, that was also a line that I didn't cross.
There you go. Yeah, the way to live life is just to come right up to that line. What a story. Playing with a deer carcass.
Which we were...
I thought you were... I
categorically not doing
I thought you were just going to tell another story involving, like, activity that might piss somebody off and get another letter sent in about you. You know what I mean?
No, that was a whopper. That's a really good story.
That's a wild one.
Is that a metaphor for this show? Playing with a deer carcass?
No, we would never, ever. I love animals, all animals. We would never in any way.
No, of course not. Absolutely not.
Unless it was a fish, because I like to fish.
I have done the floating dock on the lake near Mount Baker and drinking beers. It's great.
It's such a blast.
Wasn't firing the BB gun off. That's a nice innovation. I like that.
Didn't have a shotgun with beanbag rounds aimed at your head shortly thereafter
No.
while you were waiting for your hot dogs No. to de-thaw?
That's the funniest part. I just wanted my hot dogs. I wanted to grill some hot dogs. All right. Well, there you go. We read the complaint right at the right time, too, which is perfect. Anyways, thank you to that person for listening. Thank you to that person for emailing the station. Thank you to everyone for texting in. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's the Canucks game day. They play the Habs. Of course, as always, you'll be able to hear it here on Sportsnet 650. Full pregame coverage as well. And then Sat and Bic will have you covered on the postgame show, too. Tomorrow, of course, big Wednesday show as always. The crossover with Donnie and Dolly. And Jason Buchla will join us. So excited to get into of all of those guys, what they thought of the Canucks deadline, where they go from here, the playoff push, all of that. And with Books, the state of things around the league post deadline as well. So make sure you tune in for that one. Enjoy the game tonight. We're back tomorrow for more Canucks talk on Sportsnet 650.